like to introduce our speaker for today, who will speak until 10:10, and then we'll answer any questions from the audience. Let's welcome Jean.
I don't know what clock to look at. Okay, it's 9:45, and you said I speak till 10:10. Okay, I got 5 minutes. Okay, guess what? Guess who didn't change their watch? Anyway, I am Jean, and I'm an alcoholic. And a couple of weeks ago, I took a chip for 39 years. And yeah, that's good. But you know, a lot of people have asked why I'm still going to meetings, for crying out loud, especially if you're new, you're sitting there thinking, well, it must not work. And possibly for some of you, it won't work, because if you're like me, when I was first new, you didn't believe a word that would come out of my mouth or anyone else's. If you had more, in fact, my first sponsor only had a little over a year sobriety, because I figured those people who had 10, 15, 20 years were probably using something or were lying. It just seemed impossible to have that many years that they claimed they had. I first tried to get sober in a place I call Pyria, Peoria. And there was nothing the matter with Peoria, nothing at all. We had a beautiful home. We had everything that you could ask for. If you looked out the picture window in the living room, there was a gully, and it would change with the seasons. The colors in the fall, the snow and ice would hang on the trees in the winter. It was gorgeous. And I was absolutely miserable. I had that hole in my gut, that incomprehensible demoralization. And I knew I drank a lot, but I just didn't think it was that big a problem, no matter how terrible I felt, emotionally and physically. I was one of those that I had to have a drink to go to the grocery store. I had to crouch. I'd go to the grocery store and get a bottle because I was out. And I was shaking so bad that I always tried to have money because I knew I couldn't write the check. And someone told me later on, after I got in the program, well, you should have wrote the check ahead of time. But see, I didn't think that clear. When you're drinking, you don't think of those things. I thought of wonderful places to hide my booze after I got sober. And when I went to my sponsor at that time, she said, Jean, that just shows how much. I said, gee, I'm worried, because I keep looking around the house. I keep seeing places to hide my bottle now. And is that a danger? Am I going to drink? She says, no, Jean, it just shows how much clearer you think when you're sober than when you're drunk. And when I'd run to this store and I'd get my bottle no matter what time of the day it was, and I can remember crouching down in the back seat to hurry up and get the lid off and take a drink. But I didn't think I had a problem. I drove my kids drunk. And I'm not proud of that, because anything could have happened. I was one of those that just didn't get caught. Most of the time that I got caught by the police, back in 1971, 72, they were driving us home. They were following us home so we would be all right. Nowadays, forget it. But back then, the police a few times escorted me home from wherever I was. And I'd no sooner get in the house and I'd fall flat on my face, just face down. I was so drunk after, and here I was driving. when you come into this program, it isn't by accident. Usually somewhere along the way, you have asked for help. And when I asked for help, it was crawling around my closet. Someone just reminded me of this. I was crawling around my closet, and I was on my hands and knees, and I fell, and I hit my nose on a shoe rack. And as I've said, if you fall from your knees, that should be a clue, too, that there's a problem. But anyway, at that moment, I said, God, please help me. Now, that's a dangerous thing to say. If you're really sincere when you say it, even if you're drunk, it doesn't make any difference. It's that, God, please help me. And I'd like to say I walked into the doors of AA and was just so happy to be here. My God at that time came up the stairs. We were still in Peoria, and his name was Earl. And I says, I think I need some help. And he says, well, we've known that for a long time. And so the next day, we went to the doctor, and he insisted upon going into the doctor with me because he knew I would lie about my drinking. I always did. I was already hospitalized 2 or 3 times for my stomach, not for drinking. Drinking had nothing to do with it. It was my stomach. So we went in there, and this doctor said, and I was waiting for him to say, okay, we have this place, you know, like Mamie Eisenhower went to and all those beautiful places that the stars go to. We'll send you here so you can have massage and you know, all that stuff. So you can get well to get drunk again is what they amount to. So instead he says, well, I have found that the people that have the most luck for stopping drinking are people who go to AA. And I couldn't believe it. AA. So anyway, we went home. My husband had a smile on his face, and I was miserable. And I had some wine that day. I had to go to some committee meeting that was important. And there wasn't too much I belonged to back in those days where you didn't drink. So I had some wine, and I got home, and I called AA, and they said they'd send somebody over that night. So this woman knocked on the door, and I was so scared. I was so scared. We lived a few doors down from the mayor, and I was so afraid that people were going to see this tramp that came to the door. And always had a problem. Anyway, I opened the door, and this lady was dressed. She was very lovely. She lived about 2 blocks from my house, as a matter of fact. But I went to this meeting, and I looked around the room, and there was nothing there but a bunch of losers, as far as I was concerned. They had lost a lot. They had terrible stories, very traumatic. You know, nothing really traumatic ever happened to me in my whole life. I caused some traumatic things to happen to other people, but not to me. So anyway, I saw these people, and I thought, you know, this is not for me. These people, they're either, I thought some of them were so old, like I am today, and I thought they should have quit drinking a long time ago. You know, I was just judge. So before the meeting was over, the same group of losers had to take me to the hospital because I started shaking so bad. After all, I only had a little wine that day. So they took me to the hospital, and they gave me a shot of something, not alcohol. And but see, there was another problem. I was taking a drug called Thorazine. And it was supposed to help me with my stomach, I thought. And, you know, it's true. God watches out for babies and drunks. That's all there is to it. Because being I had it in my head that this Thorazine was for my stomach, I would drink all day. Remember, I'd forgotten to take my Thorazine and would take a double dose when I went to bed. Now, I don't know about the rest of you, but how I survive some of that stuff, I have no idea. We moved to California. Now, that was a blessing because I think I had to come here with the fruits and nuts to really fit in. I really do. And I went to the meeting down there on Main Street. That meeting, there was people there that, again, they were losers as far as I was concerned. And I went to the Tustin meetings. I was under a threat, my husband, Earl. And, you know, our marriage was so bad that one of the meetings I came, and I was always looking for excuses not to identify with you, not to admit in my heart that I had a problem with alcohol. I'd go to a meeting, and then I'd stop and buy as if a half a pint was going to last me that day. And I'd stop at the liquor store, the Quill. I'd come home from the meeting on Main Street and stop there, get my half a pint, and head for home. And I remember when I came home from one meeting, I said to my husband, I says, man, you know, those people, they've really got problems. There's women there that have prostituted themselves to get a drink. And he looked at me and he says, lucky for you, it would have taken you 2 weeks to earn a pint. I had no help at home. I had no help at home. You know, you read that chapter to the wives. You guys are so lucky. But have your wives come and talk to me. And you won't be treated quite so nicely. But the thing of it is that everyone and everything in my life, before my drinking, during my drinking, and after my drinking, has been placed there for a purpose. I truly, truly believe that. And so my husband, one of the reasons why I went into the villa, well, I couldn't stop drinking. And another thing, the people in the program never gave up on me. They never gave up on me. They would call up and say, how are you, Gene? And I'd slur out, I'm just fine. And before I'd go to a meeting, I'd eat onion and garlic and everything else to try to cover up the smell. And this one night, somebody after I'd had, you know, cleansed myself, this one guy came over to me and he says, watch out, Gene, they're picking up drunks left and right. And I was insulted. I thought, how dare he? How dare he? And come to find out, he had a hard time making the program too. But the main reason why I went to the villa, and I have to be honest, is my husband had told me if I stayed sober for 30 days, he would leave. And I knew this program was a 30-day program at the villa. So I packed my bag. I only really planned on staying about a week. I figured with someone as intelligent and as bright and wonderful as I am, it would only take a week. I wouldn't be there 30 days. At the villa, I met this woman, Flo D, and she was worse than Earl. And she was really hard on me. And she didn't feel sorry for me. I just figured, well, I don't have a sad enough story. That's why, you know, she's not giving me any attention. And she really, in her heart, she told me a couple of months later that she really never thought I'd stay sober because I still had a family, a husband, and also stuff, which is about as important as nothing, especially when you feel that empty gut inside you. And you don't know really what's wrong. And she took away my Thorazine, and which I thought was rather strange because I told her, well, that's for my stomach. And she just looked at me. I'll never forget the look she gave me. I found out later what Thorazine was all about. But the first night I was there, I sat down and the food smelled good and I started eating and then I immediately threw up. My husband called her and says Jean's got 6 cans of beer hidden in her suitcase. And I guess I heard about this later. Flo Deese told him, no, she doesn't. That beer is in her. And you're supposed to stay sober for 24 hours, or I don't remember what it was, 2 days or something. There was one place you had to stay sober a week. I thought if you could stay sober a week, why would you even go there? But the thing of it is that that was my glorious last drunk, was 6 cans of beer hidden around my bedroom. That's not the way to go out. You know, I should have had scotch on the rocks on a regular... Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that Flo D knew me very well, and she knew exactly what I needed and what I didn't need. She knew I certainly didn't need a lot of attention. And I was in the villa. It was on East Side Street, not where it is now. It was a big two-story house. It had 4 bedrooms. No, it had 2 bedrooms and upstairs, and there was 4 women in each room sharing 1 bath. And I was coming from a house that had 5 bathrooms and 6 bedrooms. So I took one look around, and I thought, this is not going to work. And the first night or two I was there, I didn't sleep at all because you just don't. People who are newly sober, if you sleep the first month, you're doing good. But I finally kind of settled down and fell asleep. And then she came and she said, we're going to the Tustin meeting. Well, I didn't want those people to know I drank, as if they didn't know. And I says, oh, I can't go to that meeting. I'll go to some other meetings, but I can't go to the Tustin meeting. They know me there. And she just looked at me, and she almost went into a rage. She just looked at me, and she says, you're going to die. You're going to die. You're afraid to go to a meeting where they probably already know you're drunk. Anyway, I went to the meeting. She had a way of putting things. But I was there for 30 days. And when I came home, I was so afraid that I was going to take a drink. I was desperately afraid I was going to take a drink. And I was hanging on to my washer, because towards the end, that was my drinking. That was my bar, was my home. And, you know, women usually isolate towards the end of their drinking. Men do too, but women really start isolating when they're in the throes of their alcoholism. But I stood there by my washer, and I happened to look down, and I saw my Clorox bottle. Well, that was one of the places where I hid my booze, was in a Clorox bottle. And I was bright enough to stop that because I was afraid I'd be in a hurry someday and actually grab the wrong bottle. But anyway, I stood there and it all just kind of comes back. And that's what I think it's good about going. And this brings me up to the 39 years and why I still go to meetings. Because I need to hear the newcomers. I need to hear this stuff to remind me of what it was like and what it would be like if I went out there. I am powerless over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable. I had a terrible time grasping I'm powerless over alcohol. I blame my mom. She's the alcoholic. She was the alcoholic. Her whole family. I have a grandfather that was murdered. I have uncles that went through plate glass windows and died. All that came from my mom's family. So when I got here, I was blaming her for a lot of my disease, and then it finally occurred to me, she didn't ask to have this disease. And not only that, but she was a periodic. And it never occurred to me that when she took a drink, she was off and running. And I never observed that when she took a drink, it started her on this binge that she'd go on for a few days. She'd go a year without drinking. My husband once said, "Your mother's an alcoholic." I didn't believe it because she wasn't a daily drunk. She wasn't days of wine and roses, that's for sure. And she was extremely emotionally supportive of me. She was a good mom, probably because she was a periodic and she wasn't drunk all the time like I was. But anyway, that powerless over alcohol, when I finally really got the concept that if I take a drunk or take a drink, if I take that funny cigarette, if I take anything, it's going to charge that again in my mind. Some people I know still think they can snort and smoke, but yet I've seen them go out, and it lowers our inhibitions, and we're right back there. We're right back there. We're going to reach for the drink. We're going to reach for anything. I had a sponsor that called it her numbsit, and that's really what it was for us. Now my program is my numbsit. My people in the program are my numbsit. My husband and I, even though I planned a divorce the first couple years I was sober, ended up being married 57 years. And we have 5 children. One is in the program. And it's amazing. My husband died last September, not this last September, a year ago, September 20th. And if it wasn't for the people in this program, I would have had more trouble. You got to know when to reach out, too. When you're in trouble in this program, you got to know when you need help and not have an ego that says, "Oh, I really don't need help." I learned this even a long time ago. My youngest daughter was raped. My son number 2 had a brain aneurysm. And I also have to remember that when stuff happens to my kids, it is not happening to me. It is happening to them. And I'm there for support. But I can't say, "Oh, this is my fault. I should have done better. How'd this happen?" I have to remember that it's all I'm there for someone who needs help is to be supportive. That's all I can do. Nothing else. I make a lousy sponsor, especially to newcomers. Newcomers run from me because I have one message for them. You're going to die. You're going to die or you're going to have a wet brain. And I see them coming in and out and in and out. And I fear for them. I understand them. I know what they're doing. I did it. But I can't, they've got to get that concept that this is not a play toy. This is something that's going to kill you if you keep using, if you keep going out. The other part of that first step, and the only one we can really practice perfectly, is knowing each day I am powerless over alcohol. The other part is my life is unmanageable, and I still have trouble with that. There's all those crouching tigers and hidden dragons out there. And you never know when you're going to go around the corner, and there it is. There it is. And you think to yourself, okay, when my daughter got raped, I was smoking. I didn't handle that well. We went to confront the man who did it. It was a date rape. And I was younger. I was in my late 40s. And I threw myself over the counter of this paint store and I stuck a cigarette into his neck. You know. I don't think that was ladylike. And I was sober quite a while. Well, you figure it out. But, you know, I don't always handle things well. Especially if it's a real hidden dragon sitting there. But I meditate every day. I meditated every morning since I got sober. Now, my idea of meditation is to do reading. and to try to sit quiet. Because when I try to meditate, my mind is already, was either at work or what. A lot of things I've done in sobriety. I got my finished my education in sobriety, got a full-time job at a college. All good stuff has happened to me. And when something, when one of those hidden dragons show their face, I turn to God immediately, the same way I did when I was crawling around on my knees. And I say, God, please help me. Only see, now I know where to get help. Now I know where it is. I've had such, I've lived a full life. I've laughed a lot, I've cried a lot, and I've loved a lot. And I love men. That was another part of my story that I left out. And it's just as well. But, yeah, I love men. I think you're absolutely fabulous. This reminds me of a high school dance. The guys are over here, and a lot of the women are over here. You know, it just, it always tickles me when I see that. Anyway, I digress. But it is a beautiful program for those who want it, for those who want it, and also for those who don't want to die or end up institutionalized the rest of their life, or for those who don't want to kill somebody accidentally. It's always an accident with us. It's never on purpose. But no more do I have to fall up and down the steps. No more do my kids look at me with that look in their eye of, oh my God, she's drunk. No longer, for many years, my husband respected me and loved me and wasn't ashamed of me. And most of all, I have to remember not to be ashamed of myself. No matter what my past looks like, it was very important. My mother was important in my life. My father was important. Today's my dad's birthday. He's been dead a few years, but, you know, what the hell? Happy birthday, Dad. It's really, if you want it, it's here. And I think to some of us who it didn't come easy, that we had a hard time getting here and grasping this, I think we even appreciate it more. I still look at people that come in the program, and within a week, they're happy. I don't get it. I just don't get it. And they take the program, and they float off, and they're, you know, they stay sober. God bless them. I guess that's what they needed. But I've had to work. God, I've had to work. And it's okay. It's okay. That's what it's all about, is taking action. That first step, you have to remember. You have to remember. And then the 10th step is extremely important. So thank you for letting me share. I love you all.
I will now turn the meeting over to our speaker for a question and answer period.
Just ask me.
Yeah, Phil. Who put you on Thorazine? Was that in the 60s? My understanding, that was for schizophrenia. Oh!
Well, the same doctor that sent me to AA was the doctor that put me on Thorazine. So, you know, he had put me on, what was the other one? That was popular back in the 60s, late 60s and early 70s. Librium? Okay, that didn't work for me. Didn't make me feel good at all.
My name's Chris, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Why is it important that once we sober up, we help other people?
Oh, you've asked the wrong person. Most of the people that I sponsor have a lot of time in the program. They usually have 10 or 15 years. I think that's why I go to meetings quite a bit, is because I do feel I have a message. And I think that's what helps newcomers, that you, when you keep going to meetings, that is definitely one way to help others. And I think that's important for my sobriety. But you know what I have found? So often I have sat in a meeting and somebody maybe with 10 or 12 days says something that helps me more than I could, you know, I take it home with me. So it works both ways. It's just a take and a give program, and thank God for that. Yeah. Oh.
My dad worked for Caterpillar.
Sorry.
I know. I'm just giving my condolences, because, I mean, if you look at Peoria, you drink too. But, so you're sharing, I'm thinking, oh my God, well, you were going from Peoria to California, you were going to California to Peoria at the same time. So, fantastic.
Yeah.
Your story is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure better than I ever was. In fact, if you aren't better, there's something wrong with you after you're around for a while. But I still, you know, have to work the program and get well. By the way, it's not going to be green in the east. So the grass will not be green. It will be white. You know, it's... I don't know. My heart really goes out to people that have a hard time making the program. And sometimes I can get pretty ornery with them, but it's mostly out of fear for them because I've seen so many come in. There was a gal I was in the villa with. Her name was Cheryl. And you thought when she got to the villa that that would have been her bottom because she'd already lost so much, been through so much, and so many things had happened to her. She was about 10 years younger. I was about 38 when I went to the villa, and she was about in her late 20s. And she could not make this program. She just could not do it. And I, you know, she finally disappeared from my life, but I keep hoping and praying that maybe somewhere you're all going to do this with people. That somebody that's passed through your life and that you were close with, I lived with her for 30 days. That somewhere, somehow, they are going to be sober and happy. And if they aren't, then they're probably with God, and that, you know, they're going to be sober and happy there, too. Okay. One quick one. The morning meditation, the morning I sit down, I read my spiritual books. And then during the day, I take a lot of deep breaths and ask God for help when those hidden dragons and crouching tigers show up a lot. Thank you.